I had an. I tried to find a joke to start with because that's what I was told, is I should always start with something funny, and I couldn't find one that was worthy of this gathering. But what I did do is I went for coffee, and I'm a New Yorker. I came all the way out from White Plains, New York, to be here today, and I am in California. It is the most extraordinary place. If you just walk around and look at who lives and how they live in California, it's absolutely fantastic. So we go for coffee at this charming place right next to a restaurant that has ironing boards for tables. We don't have anything like that in White Plains, New York. And the gal who serves us coffee, I think, you know, am I doing the right thing? Should I be at the conference this morning? Maybe I should. The gal who serves us coffee has a t-shirt on, and I can see writing tattooed under the t-shirt. I can't quite read it. And I asked her to show us what it says. And I took a picture of it because when she took her t-shirt aside, it said, from shoulder to shoulder, forgiveness. And I'll pass this around later. Can you see it? Yeah, I'll pass this around later. So I thought, I'm in the right place. I'm in California. It's always magic. So, I chose the subject of forgiving God for a few reasons. One is, I think it's the toughest forgiveness challenge that any of us can face, because there are things that happen that have no human logical rationale for the universe being a good place to live. And nobody human can be responsible. So it's got to be whoever is the ultimate boss. And by the way, I called higher power God, so that's okay. Good. So it's just the ultimate authority that each of us has to deal with. The second reason is that in many ways, when I look at my own life, the thing that is the hallmark of my own recovery is the fact that I don't bitch and moan like I used to. And I did a lot of bitching and moaning. I believe that the sense of being a victim of God is the ultimate root of complaint. I don't know if that rings for you, but it's also the root of something that says, for some reason, either God made a mistake or he doesn't like me. And the final reason I picked it was because it's the thing that scares me the most. I'm 66 today. Not my birthday, but I'm 66. Today, I'm still 66. It's, you know, when you feel like a victim of the boss, it's both a way of being right, and it's embarrassing. This is kind of a place where I have to fess up to being at war with the boss. In a way that it's like a no-win game. That there was a show years ago called Your Arms Too Short to Box with God. And it's true, but it didn't stop me. So it's embarrassing. And what I think what I need to say to you is that there was a very good reason for me to be stuck. And that if you're stuck in that place, it's because anger is serving a purpose for you that needs to be served in some way. So I made myself really wrong for being so angry and stuck at God. So much so that from time to time getting ready for this talk, I've actually kind of found myself teary and scared to death and so on. So what I'd like to do before we go any further is I'd like to take a moment and just ask for prayer. Because this is a huge challenge for me. I feel as if I'm in a way I'm dressing in public. So, so Lord, we thank you for this time, for this opportunity to be in your presence and to experience the flow of your certain goodwill for us. I ask that everything here express the good and the love that you have for us. Keep me connected with myself so that I can serve, and let everything I say minister healing, hope, and strength to everyone here. In the name of all that's holy, I pray. Amen. Amen. I feel better. Okay, so I just want to get a sense of where people are. I had suggested that if you're coming here, that you and you have some resentments toward the Almighty or whatever your higher power is, that you list them. How many people here have some items on that list? Okay. And how many people are ticked off at something about their life that they really wish was different, that they don't necessarily attract to God? Okay, so we have more in that category. And maybe it's attached to God and maybe it's not. And how many people who have something on their list are prepared to let that go if there looks like that's a good, healthy, powerful way of doing that? Okay, great. Good. Well, that gives me a sense of where you are. I'm sorry to be stuck behind here, but it's the only way that you're going to hear me on a microphone. Normally, I'm a little less separated from whoever I'm talking with. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about my story. And I'm going to start with the last 7 years. In the last 7 years, I have lost my nuclear family, almost every member, either to dementia, death, criminality, or something else. Plus, all my close women friends who are kind of my circle of sisters have either died or relocated. It has been an absolute wipeout for me. I have grieved like I have never grieved before in my life. And it's not quite done, so I may cry. But here's what's different from the way it used to be. I am not enraged at God for all these losses. What I have done with this sense of emotional devastation and abandonment is I have asked, where's the gold? What am I meant to take as a gift from this time in my life? And the answer that I got was that I'm moving into a whole new phase of my life and I need to be fully unencumbered. No responsibility to speak of, nobody I need to be home for. I don't have kids or grandkids. That hasn't been my path this lifetime. Something's coming that is going to probably keep me on the road, and I need to be free. So that's what I have held to, as this is something that will make available to me something that will be for my certain good and for the good of those I'm called to serve. It was not always like that. The major losses in my life usually had to do with either a romantic relationship. The previous speaker here was talking about crazy behavior, right? Is when you meet somebody on the street because you walk dogs together, and they tell you what's wrong with their ex, you know, for the next 45 minutes, and all you know about them is they've got three dogs. So I was one of those. And the thing that was the most devastating was that I discovered, having had these absolutely phenomenal spiritual experiences of actually meeting Jesus, meeting the Father, knowing the truth of the existence of God for me, that I couldn't deny the existence of God. But what I thought I'd found was a protector. And when I began to discover things about my childhood, I realized he hadn't protected me. Now, these days I know that was an inner kid who thought that finally I had found a safe place to be and was totally disillusioned. And I went into a screaming rage. I had been on an evangelical path. I had helped 100 people get saved, right? And I thought, oh my God, I've sold them a mess of pottage. I have sold them a lie. They were happy. I was furious. So I spent the next 3 years, people would talk about how good God is, and I would go out in my car, roll up all the windows, and scream. And I would scream until I was so tired that I couldn't scream anymore. So when I tell you that I was at war with God, I am not telling you any more than just kind of the tip of the iceberg. I was profoundly betrayed. I felt profoundly betrayed. As far as I was concerned, he was a phony, an absolute phony, and I wasn't going to lie about it. And even if he just about killed me, I would know the truth in some small corner of my being that he was a phony. That went on for years. Until one day, somebody said to me this little line, which was, "You can't know what you think or feel about God until you have forgiven your father." It was one of those penny drops moments. It just hit me that I looked at my father, who was so human and so troubled and alcoholic and doing the best he could and terribly damaging to me. And everything about my father that was problematic was also visible in the way I was seeing God. So I had to go to work on that. And what I did do is I said, okay, God, I'm willing to be wrong about this. You're going to have to show up, really show up, and show me what's the truth. Because I am not going to be betrayed on this again. You make this work. And you've got, and I didn't give him a time deadline. I usually give him a time deadline. And I couldn't do it. I actually lost the clarity of that for a while. And I worked myself into such a froth that I had just about decided I couldn't live like this anymore. And I couldn't stay alive just to keep other people from being miserable. So what I did was I gave God a week. I said, you show me a doorway and I'll stick around. Otherwise, I am done. And I don't know to this day, would I have killed myself? I don't know. I was a little afraid that if I did that, that I'd have to come back for another lifetime and it would be harder, and I wasn't willing to do that. So, but there was that ferocity of demand for a breakthrough, and God honored it. On the sixth day, I found François Lenain, who was a nun who had decided to become a therapist. And there up in Rutland, Vermont, at the car dealership, because I had a deadline and she had to meet me before the next day, I got that maybe there was somebody who could know what it was like to be who I was and tell me it was worth hanging in. She was that person. And so what I did, because it didn't go away overnight, what I had to do ultimately was say, I don't know what's real here. I don't know. And that in itself was a big deal, because in my world, if you didn't know, and if you were emotional, you were crazy. And I'd rather be dead than be crazy. It's a longer story, another story. But that was a decision I had made. It was better to do myself in than to risk going into that terrible, chaotic place where I had no way of valuing myself as anything. So my first credo was, I don't know. My second one was a decision that I made to believe that God is a good God. Because where I was coming from was, he really wasn't. He really wasn't. But God is a good God, therefore, nothing that happens to me can be for anything less than my good, my certain good. Even if I can't see it, even if it's war, disease, injury, betrayal, everything, I would choose to take as formulated for my good if I stayed true to looking for it. So, and then what I had to do was deal with my addiction to raging. I didn't know I was a rageaholic. I mean, any fool could have told me, but I didn't know it. So, I had to put myself on the wagon, which meant if I heard something and I was angry about it, instead of saying something, raging at God, if I had to stand in the middle of my living room and say, coffee, 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 until the urge went away, that's what I did. It took me 3 months before I could get through a day without having to, you know, to be like this in order to stay with my new credo. But darned if, after about 3 months, it didn't start looking as if my new credo had some validity to it. Because things would start to happen. And I realized I didn't think to item, well, actually, people would show up who I would never have met if I hadn't run into a certain problem. And I'm not going to go into detail with that because I want to make sure to give you some time to process for yourselves. And I also want to say, how are you doing with this so far? Are we on track? Okay, good. And if you want to interrupt, you know, feel free. I may seem like I'm on an inexorable and unstoppable roll, but I'm not. So, one thing that kept niggling at me when I was sitting here earlier is how many people here feel entitled to be angry at God? Any? Okay. So I want to say a little bit about what I've learned about anger. I'm really good at it, by the way. I can turn it on and off like a switch. And I do when it serves my purposes, like in a bank or someplace where I'm not getting what I should have, right? But I consider anger a gift from God for two really good purposes. One of them is to defend or protect what you value. Your family, yourself, your well-being. So to keep away what you don't want. The other is to energize you and help you focus on getting what you do want. Both of those are great gifts. They're great reasons. It's absolutely clean and honest and straight to use anger for those purposes. We humans have developed a number of additional ways to use anger. And I wonder if anybody has found any of those, as I have. I've got a list here, but I'd be interested to hear what you all have to say. How do you use anger?
Resentment.
Yeah? Yeah?
I use it to mask fear.
Great. Yeah, a lot of us use anger to mask fear.
Feel angry and afraid.
Absolutely, because that helpless feeling that goes along with fear is just awful. Yeah, what?
That goes back into defending, because you're defending your scared self.
Right, right. Yep, yeah?
I use it to keep people away. Yeah.
To distance, absolutely. Yeah?
I use it to alert me that somebody's less than a bond.
Very good. So it's information. That's a very healthy way to use anger. Yeah?
That's my own boundary. That's just outside of the universe.
Got it. Great.
I use it to avoid my feelings, to jump over my feelings.
To numb. Absolutely. Absolutely. Boy, how many of us can identify with that one? Wow. Yeah.
I use it out of habit because it's the emotion.
Oh, very good. I never thought of that. Absolutely. Boy, I grew up with rageaholics, so it was like the language. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
To intimidate.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah.
I deny my anger. Okay, I'm not angry.
Oh, boy. So how do you get them? Oh, so you turn it inward. Yeah.
And I use other things to know, to not let that anger come out. Because I was never allowed to show anger. I have to be the good girl.
Got it. So you use the anger on yourself.
I went to an anger workshop and it's, giving me things to do. And I couldn't, because I had it so buried.
Yeah. And in the back? Oh, very good. Well, that's the energize. That's a very good way to use it. Yeah?
We agree.
You agree. Okay. Okay. Did you have... All three of you agree? Okay.
I use it to feel more powerful than I believe I am.
Got it. So you plump yourself up.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Get what I want.
Yeah, well, that's a very good way. But the question is, how do you get what you want?
Well, it all depends. To get what I want, maybe from someone.
Yeah.
You know, to get my way.
So do you bully your way through?
With my husband, maybe.
Okay.
Or let it be a reason for me to go spend money.
Yep, got it. Yeah.
To feed my addiction to drama.
To feed your addiction to drama. I didn't catch that one. That's a great one. Yeah. To support the fact that I'm right. I've got down here to justify a position. Absolutely. Yeah. This is rich.
I will use it to deny that I have a choice. That I'm being denied a choice, I should say. In whatever it is.
You use it to deny...
Oh, I feel. I want to say I'm feeling angry when I feel like that choice is being denied.
Got it.
In other words, I'm victimized. So I feel at that moment, you know, that I can't do it. I can't make a choice like this person who's saying I can.
Right, so angry victim against being controlled. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
Use it to control others.
Absolutely, to manipulate and dominate. Yeah. Let's see. I have here... So we've got... You've really got most... How about blackmail? Anybody ever use anger for blackmail? Right? You do that, I'm going to be angry at you forever. You will pay. I will not talk to you. Okay. There's one other that I think is... certainly is a huge one for me. And that is that... Anger is a way, I have used anger as a way to postpone or deny reality. If the reality is that I have lost something, I've lost a relationship, I've lost something I wanted so much, so who is the ultimate source of making something happen or not? That's God. That's what was going on for me and God, was I felt so unworthy, so unloved, and if I could stay mad long enough, maybe it would change. If I could stay mad long enough, maybe it would change. So, now all these reasons, that all these ways we use anger, they, underneath them is a healthy impulse to get ourselves what we need or to keep away what we don't need. It's also from a young place, because these are all, in a way, magical uses of anger. The belief that anger has the power to get us what we want, keep away what we don't want, to make reality not what it is. So the young parts of ourselves will use anger as punishment, use anger in a variety of ways, thinking that it's going to solve a problem. In inner family healing, which is the model is you're the grown-up and you have a variety of inner children. The forgiveness model is that unforgiveness, the beliefs about staying angry and what that gets us, are held by young parts of ourselves. And if we go inside and say, why, what are we scared will happen if we forgive? That the answers are usually going to be coming from 3-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 9-year-olds. So it's interesting, if you have something that you've had trouble forgiving, find out what the danger is. What's the danger? If I forgive, I'll have to trust the person. If I forgive, I'll never be able to protect myself again. I have to stay angry to protect myself. The belief is that if you're not angry, you can't protect yourself. How true is that? It's not. It's a myth. Okay. So, let me take a deep breath. Any questions so far? Anything come up for people? Yeah.
The last point you just mentioned.
That some people feel that if they give up their anger, they can't stay safe. I'll give you an example. We had a friend who was head of a halfway house in Harlem. The people who were in the halfway house, most of them had been on drugs, and the neighborhood was really, really dangerous. And he stayed enraged. You could see he was so armored, and he couldn't give up his rage because he was afraid that he wouldn't be able to protect his family, who also lived in this dangerous environment. He ended up having a paralyzing stroke because for him, staying angry and being safe were fused. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
What came up for me during the course of this part of which we're talking about was that I'm having difficulty letting things go or forgiving because somehow I want to keep, attain, or get my power back in those situations, and I'm not sure what that looks like.
Okay. Can you give me a little more data? You know what? Before you do that, let me give you the first thought I have. When someone has done something to you or failed to deliver in some way, it's we feel helpless to control the outcome, the pain that we're in. The problem is that as long as we stay mad at that person, we are actually giving them power to keep us miserable. And taking back our power means telling the truth about what happened and then saying, and from this point on, you don't get to run my state of mind one more minute. I am done with you. And I will let my higher power teach you that what goes around comes around. Like that? I like that. And you know what? It almost always happens, so you get to see it. I had a client who stiffed me for a really big amount of money, and that's what I said to him. He said, "We're not paying you," and I said, "Well, be careful, because what goes around comes around." He was out of business in 12 months. Don't mess with me. I got friends in high places. Yeah.
Can I share something with you real fast about what you said about being mad at someone? My mother said something to me that angered me. And I says, okay, I'm going to fix her. I'm not going to call her. So here I am, angry with my mother because of something that she said. And I didn't call her for over 2 weeks. And I'm festering and I'm telling my husband, well, my mother this and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was actually angry with her for a good week. And so then I says, well, enough is enough. So I called my mother. I says, you know what, Mom? I'm sorry I got mad at you. And she says, you're mad at me?
I know. Darn, we've been working so long to punish them and they just didn't even know the difference.
I swear to God, one of these days I will learn to listen to this woman. She says, you see, that's why why you don't waste your time being mad at people, because you don't hurt anybody but yourself.
Yeah.
I learned something from that. So, you know, it's funny, the older I get, the more I learn.
Yeah, it's a great story. I think one of the biggest things, the ongoing challenge in one's life, is to tell the truth faster. I actually had to learn, I actually practiced phrases. I wrote them down. I made an inventory of phrases like, that doesn't feel good. It would give me a way to introduce the subject. Or I'd say, really? Or something that would kind of wake me up so I could remember to tell the truth. The other thing I learned was not to let something that bothered me be the last communication before I decided to punish them. So I would say, I would learn to say, I don't hold conversations with that tone of voice anymore. Are you sure you want to have that be the last thing you say to me before I leave? Isn't that great? I love that. So I'll give it to you again. I don't hold conversations with that tone of voice anymore. Which brings up another thing. It's very important to learn about verbal abuse. Because one of the things, to get into situations where you need to forgive someone, it usually means you've missed a signal and allowed them to do something to you that was nasty. And if you catch them early, I'm talking about people who are kind of predatory and persecutory anyway, if you catch them early and you notify them that you are not available for them, then you don't have to get mad. You can use that assertive angry energy early. So that you don't have to be hassled at all. It works like a charm. And it'll also notify you when you see someone being like that. Like if you see somebody being icky with a waiter or somebody who's a service personnel, you know, watch that. That person is likely going to give you an opportunity to forgive them. So I want to step back for a minute and return this conversation to forgiving something that you have on your plate to forgive. Yeah.
You tell the truth ahead of time, but they reject it or do not believe it. How do you deal with that?
Right. If they don't agree with your truth, the way you see it in terms of data can be different. They see the situation a certain way, you see it differently. But the way you feel about it, they can't, they have nothing to say about that. It's your feelings, your right to see it, and for that matter, it's your right to see it a certain way. The question is, what are you going to do about the discrepancy? Does that answer your question? I'll give you an example. I was being courted by a wonderful man, absolutely wonderful man. However, we had such different worlds that it was really a mismatch. He saw it a certain way, people should do this. And I didn't agree with him. And he was so uncomfortable when they didn't do that, that he couldn't be part of my world. Because my world wasn't so structured. I could be part of his, but he couldn't be part of mine. So I had to make a decision about how I wanted to live and whether I wanted a partner who was also comfortable in my world or whether I only wanted to share his and then I'd have to go off on my own without being able to share any of mine. And I made the decision finally that I wanted someone who had more versatility. It would be lonely otherwise. I'd have to kind of not share part of myself with my most intimate friend. Does that make it clear? Or clearer? Think about it. You know what? I'll be around after the talk is over. I'm available. So, okay. There's somebody over here. Yeah.
I'm interested in your perspective personally about, because it's not that I'm mad at God. It's just that there's a part of me that doesn't want to fully trust the God. And I should preface this question with that in my own life, you know, acceptance of the challenges that God places in my life, I'm comfortable with, or am becoming. but it's hard for me, and I don't feel angry, but I feel confused about a God that would put things in the world like plague and natural disasters. And I, you know, it's hard for me to trust fully, you know, a God that would, you know, wreak such havoc on so many people all at once.
They're like, what's wrong with you?
Well, yeah. You know, it's not really my point of view to say that to God, because, you know, but I... You know,
I recommend trying it sometime, you know, it's just an expression. It'll get it off your chest because it's under there.
Yeah. Well, I just feel confused. It, you know, because for me, I look at the world and I see a lot of order. And even in, you know, the process of being more conscious and pursuing my recovery, I see a lot of order and a lot of reassurance. But,
you know what? It's the question of the ages. And greater minds than yours and mine have stumbled across them. You know, it's like nobody's got the final answer. So it really is a faith walk. And it's a choice. I have actually, I mean, who knows? I may get to the other side and say, call that one wrong, but but I'm placing my bets. And here's the thing. It seems to be working. And that's actually where I come down. Am I right? Am I wrong? I don't know. But I am actually pretty happy. And I've lost almost all the people close to me. And I'm still standing. And I'm still hopeful and expectant. And guess what? I'm right here. I have this incredible view of beautiful Californians. Oh my God. What do you want, you know? This is wonderful. So it's a gamble in a sense. You know, who are you going to bet on? Where are you going to place your bets? That's where I am. It's the best I can do at the moment. And when things get really rough, I ask for some kind of signal. Because God does... There's this process where you get little signs. My sign used to be, I would go to a thrift store and I would get an over-the-top bargain. Like I would pay $12 for a suit in my favorite color that I would later learn started at retail for $2,500. I mean, it would be so it would be just mind-boggling. And that when I was at the lowest, there would be something like that. Yeah?
How I handle things. A couple months ago, my ex-boyfriend's mom, she was dying of cancer, and she was my recovery mom.
Oh.
And so, a year ago, my dad died. So I was in so much pain, and I did meditation. I asked my higher power, show me your will. And I had a spiritual awakening. My higher power said, it's part of my plan, and I have something amazing for them. That's what I heard. I mean, that was a miracle. It's part of my plan. You know, because I was questioning, you know, my girlfriend Robin, who's sweet as candy, she died of breast cancer, like, why? You know, so when I connected to my higher power and asked, please show me your will, my higher power said, I have something amazing for them. Part of my plan.
Yeah, and you never know what kind of, whether you're going to get an answer or when or in what form. Something always happens when you're really at your wit's end and ask. It just does. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Audrey.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Audrey.
You know, I'm blessed. When I was in, I'm also an alcoholic, and when I was in a depth of my total fall, and God came to me two angels, and there was a man and a woman, and the man spoke to me. And he said, if you don't quit drinking, you're going to die of a heart attack by the age of 40. He was 43 or 45. I'm 48 now, so I'm grateful for that part. Got past that hump.
Yeah, can you all hear?
45, I was in a little trouble. But
God came to her with two angels, a man and a woman, and the male said, if you don't stop drinking, you'll be dead by the time you're 40. Do you want to stand up and turn around?
I would be dead by the age of 43 or 45. And in that, I was shocked, and he said, you have to promise me that you'll quit drinking. And I knew my heart hurt, and I'd call up, so I said, really, to the best of my ability. And he said, that's what I wanted to hear. And in that moment, I sunk back into myself. I saw a bright light, and I just bolted straight up in bed. And I had the biggest smile on my face. I ran into the room, and hey, this what happened to me? You know, woke somebody up. And I could not go back to sleep. I ended up going into recovery. This was in 1996. And I went into recovery. And by the grace of God, I'm alive, well, and it's over. And, you know, Ron, God will touch you in many fashions, whatever it may be. I'm a true believer. I'm just blessed.
So, what I'd like to do, if you are okay with it, is to just do a meditation, a little guided meditation, to take you through and bring you to as far along on this forgiveness process as we can, while we're in the power of this from you know where. Where all these people are gathered together, there the divine is also, and whatever you ask will be granted. That's mine. So, uncross your arms and legs. Take a few deep breaths. You might want to take stuff off your lap, be unencumbered. And two deep breaths. Okay, you can cross your arms and legs. pick what it is that would be most liberating for you to walk out de-encumbered by. Okay, let me put that in a little more lucid way. The thing that you want to forgive, pick that. Okay, take a deep breath, see it in front of you. And now ask your higher power or powers, anybody who is an ally of yours, either living or dead, all the spirits and souls who have been part of your healing. Say to them, I want to be free of this. Body, soul, and spirit. And all the resentment, the fear, the grief, the pain that you have experienced. See where that is located in your body. And give it a color. It can be any color you like. It can even be a bunch of colors. And look throughout your body to see if there might be some hiding somewhere and make sure it all has a color. And when you're, when you've done that, just give me a little wave so I know you're ready. Okay, another 30 seconds. Good. Now, ask the divine, ask your ultimate higher power to help you in this next step. Imagine that all this color is on an acetate sheet, which you can move, and it will still retain the shape of where it is in your body, but it will, it can be moved outside, beyond the boundaries of not only your physical body, but your energetic body. So, on the count of three, move it, move the acetate sheet out, clear of your energy body, probably maybe 5-6 feet. 1, 2, 3. And now ask this divine, this higher power of yours, to receive this old negative energy into itself, or himself, or herself, or them, however you express that. To receive all that color into itself, to be returned to love. Good. And now, ask your higher power to replace that energy in your physical and energetic system with either something that you specifically desire, a peace or love or a hope, whatever it is, or for whatever serves your highest good. Because you don't want to leave spaces unfilled. You want them filled with divine energy. Sometimes your higher power will do some surprising things. So whatever that is, simply receive it. Take a few deep breaths, and in your own time, come back into the room. Or not, if you want to just stay in that space, go ahead and do that. We have about 6 or 7 minutes before we need to close up. If you wouldn't mind, turn to a partner or two and just share, if you like, what happened to you. And I'm going to give you a minute for each person. Okay? So, starting... Oh, everybody have a partner? Raise your hand if you don't have a partner. Okay, great. All right, starting now. I'll tell you when to switch. Meditation.
Well, I have a hard time visualization, but I saw Jesus, and Jesus was taking away the brown, kind of the orange, the red and the green mixed together. The red and the
right.
It's ugly, whatever it was, red and green.
Yeah.
and that was related to anger at my mother for not really being a servant. No, just
servant. 10 seconds.
Related to kind of putting me in the adult child position.
Got it.
So I'm not really being
and how are you feeling right now?
Fine.
All right. Good.
If I had Jesus put give yellow.
Okay. Good. Anybody have
thank you.
Killer share that they want to do something really happen? Oh wait, before we go to that. Check out your body and see or feel how you feel physically now.
Can we have another minute?
You want another minute? Oh, okay. All right. So David Coleman, don't you beat me up. I got orders to finish on time. I promised. So, this is something, this color meditation was something that I was given. And it's something that you can use on your own, either on your own or with a friend. You can use it on anything. You go in, you identify the feeling, and you find out where it is in your body. You can even do it with inner children, because sometimes the feelings are lodged only in one child or two. And then you have them give it a color. Then you have, when they've got everything colored, then they move it out of the space. And then they give it to God. And then ask for something to replace it. Do not forget the replacement energy. It's very, very important spiritually. I'm going to be here for as long as anybody needs to talk afterwards. So, but for now, as a good girl, I am going to say we are done. Thank you so, so much. Thank you so much. Yes.
I just want to say thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking. It was a nice way to kind of, you know, summarize this whole conference. And I just want to say, my energy is good.